From wars and natural disasters to presidential campaigns and unrest in places like Baltimore and Ferguson, a CNN veteran joins the show today to remember some of the biggest news moments of the last 25 years. Don't miss it. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. Hope you had a great weekend. First Coast Connect is always live on the radio. And now, catch our daily podcast on iTunes. Never miss a show. And don't miss this conversation, because up next, CNN's Mark Biello joins the program. Get on the line now with your questions for this CNN veteran, 549-2937, to join the show. Then later, how a special program is helping low-vision adults here on the First Coast, plus Cole Pepper on the Jags picks in the NFL draft and all of the week's sports, all of that ahead. But first this morning, he's worked with some of the most notable names in the television industry, from Katie Couric and Peter Jennings to Christian Amanpour and Bernard Shaw. Mark Biello, winner of 9 Emmys, 5 Peabodys, and a DuPont Award, has traveled to more than 80 countries, capturing compelling stories for CNN for 31 years now. Biello was portrayed in the HBO film Live from Baghdad as the only photojournalist for CNN to be in the capital when the Gulf War began. He's covered the fall of communism in Eastern Europe, the Berlin Wall, the fall of the Soviet Union, Somalia, Rwanda, Bosnia, South Africa, Ethiopia, and dozens of conflicts and wars around the world. Not to mention too many presidential campaigns to list. So as CNN approaches its 35th anniversary, a special treat as Mark Biello joins us now in studio with a look back to the network's earliest days and some thoughts about the future of news. Mark Biello, a pleasure. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you on the show. And what are your questions for CNN veteran Mark Biello? Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. We also welcome your comments on Facebook. There's so much to discuss. What an incredible career. But let's talk about something that's making headlines right now. You just got back from covering the unrest in Baltimore, Maryland, right?
Yes, yes.
And what was that like?
You know, a lot of it was a lot like Ferguson and some of the other demonstrations. It was pretty dangerous on the streets. You know, we had our own security, but you could feel the tension building every night as more protests. And as it, you know, I think a lot of the people in the neighborhood and the community just wanted answers. They wanted results. But you could feel the tension with the demonstrators day after day as it was building up until that Monday when the rioting broke out.
And as someone who's been in conflict zones all over the world, you probably have a sense of when things are about to turn.
Yeah, yeah. There are certain signs, you know, just from experience. And, you know, the nice thing was, though, we took precautions. You know, we would have our own security with us. We still had a few people that were injured. We had one cameraman that had his nose broken. You know, just wrong place, wrong time, or, you know, he was getting out of the car and basically was mugged, you know, on his way to our location, our secure location.
You've been in some of the most dangerous zones around the world, covering wars, natural disasters, conflicts. Have you ever been hurt?
No, I've had a few close calls. I had a sniper bullet miss me by 2 inches, and Mostar, that was during the Bosnian conflict. And a couple of shells hit in front of me, and everyone got hit by shrapnel, but for some reason it missed me. So a lot of close calls, but knock on wood, I've been kind of fortunate.
You've been very fortunate, and in fact, what a career you've had at CNN. Your nickname around the network, I'm told, is Mad Dog Mark. Is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Mad Dog comes from one of the founding fathers of CNN, Ted Kavanaugh. Whose concept was Headline News, the second network of CNN. So when he left the company, he passed it on to me.
You started right out of college, 1983.
Yes, long time ago.
What are your memories of your first day there?
First day, kid right out of school, you know, it was at that time we were Chicken Noodle News.
Everybody called it that then, didn't
yeah,
they?
Yeah.
And, it wasn't taken seriously at first.
Oh, no, not at all. And even starting at Headlines, or at that time was called CNN2, and working with Chuck Robert, Lynn Russell, and, you know, he was this kid behind the camera, you know, the studio camera, that everyone thought maybe it would last a year or two. It's like, how could you have news 24 hours?
It was so revolutionary.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you took the job, did you think, I'll just do this for a year or two and then go to the next thing?
Well, yeah, because I grew up in Chicago, and it was a union shop, and, you know, WBBM and all these other stations were all unionized. So, it was one of these things where I'd leave for a couple of years, get the experience and come back, but never did.
You stayed.
Yes.
And we'll go to your calls for CNN's Mark Biello in just a moment, 549-2937. So how did you evolve from this fresh-faced kid with a camera to this incredible war correspondent and video journalist, producer, the guy they trust to go into the most dangerous spots around the world?
A lot of it's passion for what we do. And but, you know, at that age, you know, you listen to the elders. I learned a lot from the other older network guys from NBC and ABC and CBS. And didn't really train under them, but watched them, and they passed down. You know, we're like a small family, and especially on the campaign trails covering the presidential races.
Let's talk about that. Ben Carson just announced he's running for president. Carly Fiorina, Mike Huckabee is expected to announce soon on the Republican side. You've covered so many campaigns.
Yeah.
You must have incredible memories of covering these candidates. What, when you think back on these campaigns, what jumps out at you in terms of the most vivid memories?
I think the camaraderie that's formed to all the journalists, whether it's print or radio or TV, you bond because you're with these people 20 hours a day. And the Bush campaign in 1988, I was on there for 14 months.
You got to know Bush pretty well, I would think. Bush
yeah.
41.
Yeah, and Barbara, and that whole campaign, and staff, and the Secret Service, and more importantly, all the network guys, and we're still like friends. I see them, you know, we resurface at the same places in the same campaign. So,
what was the wildest thing to happen on a presidential campaign that you witnessed or heard about?
Oh boy.
That you can tell us on the radio.
There was always the biggest fear of oversleeping with Secret Service baggage call. We would get in a hotel at midnight, and then we would have to get up at 3:30. And the biggest fear was missing.
3 hours of sleep.
3 hours of sleep. This would go for weeks and months at a time. And you never really slept, you know.
How did you do that? How did you keep going?
It's a lot of it's just, it's a drive. You sleep on the buses. You'll cover four or five states in one day. You'll sleep on the plane 10 minutes here, 20 minutes there on the bus and the motorcade. So, those were, the one memorable moment was that I locked myself out of the room. I was kind of sleepwalking. I had the camera, but I didn't have any clothes on.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so I had to go down to the lobby. Yeah, I had to go down to the lobby with the camera and a palm leaf. And, it was very embarrassing.
Oh, get out of here.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to go to your calls right now for CNN's Mark Biello. Mad Dog Mark, the veteran war photojournalist, has been with the network for an incredible 32 years. What are your questions? 549-2937. Leon in Jacksonville. Hi, Leon. Leon, are you there? Okay, give us a call back. All right, I want to go back to what we talked about in terms of your war experience, because this is so fascinating to me. You, of course, were the first CNN guy on the ground in Baghdad during the first Gulf War, and your experiences with Bernard Shaw and the other folks from CNN were memorialized in the HBO film Live from Baghdad. Let's listen.
I want all my employees to come home standing up.
Where in hell?
Goodness, we go now. ABC and CBS are pulling out.
Well, no story is worth risking your life.
Nothing you can do to stop this, especially dying.
I'm not going to walk away from a great story.
what just happened? We just became the story.
Peter Arnett, CNN Baghdad.
Hey guys, something's up. Everybody's saying we gotta get out of here.
I want to stay. I'm asking you to go.
So in that film, actor Josh Leonard played you, right?
Yes, he portrayed me, and I was able to work on that film as a technical advisor and work on set design and actually train Josh to act like me, sound like me. And he grew a beard, dyed his hair. I thought he did a great job.
Yeah, it was a great movie, and Michael Keaton played the bureau chief, right?
Yeah, Robert Wiener,
right.
And Ingrid Formanek. It was Helena Bonham Carter. And I thought the portrayal was very good. Mick Jackson, the director, and everyone that worked on that film, they did a really nice job. I thought it was pretty realistic, and they listened to the input and the feedback that we gave them.
And if you have questions about any big story over the last 25 years, whether it's the Iraq War, Hurricane Katrina, the presidential campaigns that you've been watching on cable news, now's the time to give us a call and connect with CNN's Mark Biello, 549-2937. Leon in Jacksonville. Hi, Leon. Are you there? Leon, go ahead, man. He's called two or three times now, but we'll try to connect him. You know, there may be an issue with our phone system. So I have to ask you as well, when you were in Iraq, and you were getting shelled, and you weren't sure of whether or not you were going to come out in one piece. Did you ever have any moments of terror? You're such a calm guy. Were you ever terrified?
Oh, yeah, every time. Every time we go into conflict or even, you know, on the streets of, you know, when we were in Ferguson and Baltimore, even with the experience, there's always that fear. And fear is a good thing. It, you know, it keeps you alive, keeps you aware. And you know, and you want to be safe. You want to cover the story, but you also want to stay safe. But the first Gulf War, you know, when you go back, no one knew what a cruise missile was, what a stealth bomber was, all this new technology that the Allies had. But it was also an opportunity to cover an enemy's capital on the receiving end. There's something wrong with that. I mean, there's a psychological effect of 30% of your salary is paying for federal taxes that are trying to take you out, you know, on these incoming artillery and airstrikes and cruise missiles.
Right. And Ferguson, tell me about Ferguson.
Ferguson, that built up, that was, you know, there were a lot of lessons to be learned from Ferguson, I think, you know, on all sides. It was a learning curve. You know, a lot of other cities after that, and, you know, it was unfortunate what happened, you know, there with the rioting and tear gas. But, you know, we kept ourselves safe. We, at the same time, we had off-duty police officers that acted as security. But I think a lot of lessons were learned. And, you know, a lot of this, a lot of it came out through social media, too.
What about Katrina?
Katrina, I was there during the storm. And I actually had a front row seat. I was on the rescue operations and ended up saving 16 people because there was no
So unlike else. Brian Williams, you actually saved people during Hurricane Katrina.
And, well, what happened was, you know, there just wasn't anyone else. And we, you know, we rode the storm out and I jumped on the boat with three local guys and they needed help pulling people into the boats and chomping through rooftops.
When you're in these situations, it must be difficult to remain objective and just shoot what's happening when people need help.
Yeah, this was a first because I had to put the camera down and actually physically help because so many people were trapped in the rooftops. There just wasn't anyone in those first hours.
And it's 549-2937 to join the show and connect with CNN veteran Mark Biello. Zach in St. Augustine. Hi, Zach. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. I want to thank the journalists for doing a great job to bring to life the hell of war. And I think back to when I was growing up, Dan Rather, that's young Dan Rather, I think that's the kind of journalist we need today. And obviously this gentleman is out of that mold. My question to him, what is his view or how does he feel about the recent deaths, murders of innocent journalists trying to cover the war in certainly by ISIS and in the Middle East today, the executions by that terrorist group.
Zach, that's a great question. Thanks so much.
Yeah, it's you know, we've been covering these kind of situations, you know, since you know journalism began. This is a really difficult one and a very dangerous one. You know, there's one part of you is, you know, you have to cover the story. We have to be there as journalists and try to tell all sides. The danger now is, you know, the kidnapping and all these executions. It's a difficult situation, especially for news organizations, but also for a lot of people that are stringers that are out there without support. You know, it's a very unfortunate and a very, very dangerous time.
And CNN has had to make editorial decisions about what to show. For example, your competitor, Fox News, showed video of prisoners being burned alive in a cage. CNN has erred on the side of not showing that type of footage.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's got to be a nightmare for, you know, the executives and editorial people to try to say what is to be shown and what's not to be shown, you know, on TV, because that could also affect public opinion and, you know, the whole situation.
Tim in Arlington is on the air. Hi, Tim. Good morning to you.
Hi, I just wanted to ask you a question. It's not a very, I guess it's not that important of a question, but it's something that just dawned on me. You must have to pay through the nose for insurance, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, the company actually takes care of us, you know, when we get into war zones.
Okay. Yeah, wow. Because I just can't imagine.
Yeah, it's, well, we get $1 million life insurance policy. It's a war insurance that's activated. But, you know, again, we're not doing it for money. We're journalists. It's important that we cover these stories.
You gotta protect your assets.
Yeah, yeah.
$1 million life insurance policy for war.
Yeah, it's activated.
Yeah. Are you married?
No, not at this time.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, that's another big concern, and that's a question that always comes up. The guys with spouses and children, I don't know. I mean, hats off to them for, you know, going in these places and yeah, giving everyone ulcers and heart attacks.
That's a great question, though, from Tim. That's Tim in Arlington, because I think that whenever there's whenever war breaks out, whenever there's a natural disaster, severe weather, any kind of major breaking news situation, people turn to CNN. And it's because of employees like you. CNN has really established a reputation for being the most comprehensive network all around the world to cover these types of events. And it really speaks to your skills and your dedication. And, you know, there are so many other stories that I want to ask you about. You were at Ground Zero on September 12, 2001. Can you tell us about that day?
Yeah, I was in Atlanta when the towers came down and drove through the night, stopped at the Pentagon. We saw the Pentagon on fire, you know, and still smoldering, and then got into lower Manhattan through. We had to circle all the way around because they closed all the bridges, but I was able to get in, and then I was down in East 14th Street and very close to the actual zone. And that kind of affected me in a way that I wanted to follow through with the story, because after covering 9/11, I ended up with the Northern Alliance forces, came down through Uzbekistan and was there when they liberated Kabul. And then after, I was actually in the U.S. Embassy when the Marines came in to take the embassy back after closing it in 1979 or 1980. And then from there, I ended up in Guantanamo Bay, and I actually went through Mayport and through the U.S. Navy, and we were there when the first al-Qaeda detainees were there at Camp X-Ray and Gitmo.
What do you think about the ongoing controversy over whether Gitmo should be closed?
That's something I think about a lot, because being there from the first days in 2001, when the first detainees came in, and just trying to imagine that you're still in these prisons, what do you do with these al-Qaeda, you know, prisoners or EPWs, whatever you want to call them? What do you do? I mean, do you just keep them there for life? Do you let them go? Do you process them through a judicial system? or do you release them and they go right back to where they were before? It's one of these gray areas that's unwritten history. It's never happened before, and it's got to be an ongoing problem for, you know, governments and the military, actually.
And we'll go back to your calls for CNN's Mark Biello in just a moment at 549-2937. The Berlin Wall, what are your memories of that,
Berlin Wall, the night that fell?
We've
been up for hours, and, you know, you're covering this historic event, and you're freezing with no sleep. And I just remember that those were the history of that coming down, and never thought in a lifetime to ever see something like that. And that was one of the big historical events, and it was like, okay, well, I've seen the wall come down. There's nothing more.
Nothing could top that.
Yeah, nothing. Wow, the Berlin Wall. Here comes the first chunk out.
Were you the photographer shooting the images of the first chunks coming out for
CNN? Yeah, and then I was working with Andre from our Paris bureau, and at that time I was shooting and running sound, and just to be there, and I got some really nice, you know, historical photos I need to do something with.
When you're in the moment and this incredibly historic event is going on right around you, are you stopping and thinking, I can't believe I'm witnessing this, or are you just doing your job?
You're doing your job. You're so focused. You're in the zone. It hits you later, I think, you know, when you go back and you look at it, and it's like, wow, yeah, this really happened. But at the time, you're focusing on trying to do the best job reporting or covering it or shooting, you know, the video.
And let's point out how good you are at that. You've won 9 Emmys, 5 Peabodys, and a DuPont Award, an incredible professional resume for CNN's Mark Biello. The number to join us, 549-2937. Orville is on the south side. Hi, Orville. Good morning.
Good morning, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, could you guys tell us what's the most dangerous situation he has been in, and with a heartbeat would turn to that situation because of its relevance as far as news is concerned?
Yeah, thanks for the question.
Yeah, the most dangerous by far, I think, was Bosnia, covering the Bosnian conflict, specifically Sarajevo. We were targeted by the Serbs and with a price on our heads. Had a lot of friends that had been shot, a lot of friends that were killed, and It was a difficult situation because, you know, you didn't know where the front lines were with an ethnic conflict, you know, between the Croats, Bosnians, and Serbs. And, that was the most dangerous. That was the scariest. And every day you woke up and you weren't sure if you were going to get hit or killed in that conflict.
Did you ever say, I want out, send me back to Atlanta?
After the market massacre in Sarajevo, that was pretty rough. That was tough. But, you know, it was important that the world see, you know, as journalists, we needed to be there. We needed to cover this to show the world what was happening. But at the same time, extremely dangerous.
549-2937, Linda in St. Augustine. Hi, Linda. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you. I have 3 questions, and then I'll hang up. My first question is, what story has personally impacted you the most? The second question is, well, actually, it's just 2 questions. What stories impacted you the most, and what story is there that you wish you could have covered?
Thanks, Linda. Great questions.
Oh, great questions. Yeah. The 2 most pivotal stories, I think, was the Bosnian conflict and the Sarajevo. Just because, you know, the danger and the historical, you know, thing. But I think what had the most impact was Katrina, and actually covering something like that within the United States, but also being there on the rescue operations. And, you know, we saved the people we could, but there were a lot that we couldn't get to. So that was a personal, you know,
Yeah, and you said covering something like that in the United States, because normally I'm guessing that's the type of situation you'd be covering overseas, not in this country.
Yeah.
And she said, is there anything you wished you covered? It sounds like you've covered everything. I don't think you've missed much.
Well, I never get to cover a golf golf championship or any, I don't know, it would be nice to do a PGA thing or even the Players coming up this week. That would be fun
to
cover.
That would be a nice change for you, wouldn't it?
A light duty. Yeah, do a cooking show or something like a travel. How about a travel?
Something where your life's not at risk.
Yeah, how about with Anthony Bourdain? That would be fun.
You know? You'd be great with him.
Yeah, and I love food. I'm a foodie.
Well, then, you know, that brings up another question. CNN has really kind of diversified its programming with shows like Bourdain's and other things. You've been there from the very earliest days, and you've witnessed all these changes. What do you think about all of these tweaks and changes?
That's a great question. You know, you see the shift in formatting and see, you know, a different direction, trying to keep viewers. It's tough to keep people focused or loyal to, I think, any network because, you know, you got all the social media. So I think it's a mix now. It's an interesting mix between the hard news and real journalism versus these feature shows that they're bringing in. It's going to be an interesting time to see how this plays out and see a nice mix of both.
Barney at the Beaches. Hi, Barney. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. My son, Gerard Kane, was embedded with Martin Savage during the second Iraqi invasion. Did you know him, and did you ever work with him?
I've worked with Marty, but I didn't know your son. I was actually with the 1st MEF, with the Marine Expeditionary Force, with Sanjay Gupta, our doctor, embedded with the Marines. The embedded situation was something that was unique, too, that the Pentagon came up with, you know, bringing us in. And I thought all the people that we worked with were really great. We had all different teams at that time in 2003.
When you're embedded, that's a blessing and a curse, isn't it?
That's correct. The other danger is when you're embedded, the bonds that you form with the Marines or the people you're with, the soldiers you're with, because you still have to stay objective, but you build a bonding and friendship with them also.
Let's go to Raj in Jacksonville. Raj, good morning.
Hi. Thanks for picking up my call. Question to the whole, how much of a political pressure do you think in the past has deprived you from covering a top story? And then the second question is, how do you see the future shape up in the space of journalism?
Well, you know, a lot of times, you are suppressed and you do get the censorship when you're trying to cover, especially from these countries, under Saddam Hussein, there was a lot of censorship. I think social media is the thing that's opening up the eyes of governments and freedom of speech and just coverage. You know, everyone has iPhones now, even the most remote places, and maybe the exception with North Korea. But I think social media is the big key to opening up more of a freedom of speech and expression.
Yeah, it becomes impossible for a repressive regime to completely control the flow of information.
Yeah, and I think that big key is going to be North Korea to see what happens in the future.
Why is that?
Well, just, you know, it's been so cut off and isolated, but they I've never been there, so to see what comes out in the next years, you know, out of North Korea.
That's got to be probably one of the only countries you haven't
oh,
been
that,
to.
That might be the one thing I wish I that, have that, covered that I haven't covered.
That's the one thing.
Yeah.
William in Murray Hill. Hi, William.
Hey, good morning. It's a pleasure to speak to you. I'm listening and proud that, and I'm really scared to do your job, but I would like to ask you, with the disparaging from your experience, you know, disparaging wealth in America with the wealthy and the poor, you know, the difference there, and with the recent unrest, especially in cities like Baltimore, they kept talking about unemployment, you know, stuff like that. Could you see the people like them ISIS people trying to reach these young blacks over here who we can't, and I mean a black fellow, can't seem to reach, and having them trying to join them, something like that. because it seems like overseas over here, they that's basically got the youth people, you know, the kids who are disenfranchised and disoriented and stuff. And I take my answer off the.
Yeah. Thanks, William.
Oh, that's an interesting. I never even thought about something like that happening. You know, the disparity that's happened, you know, in America, like you said, you know, there's a song by Randy Newman about Baltimore, and that was written in the mid-70s. I think, you know, a lot of economically poor areas are you know, they've been like that for decades, and it's going to be interesting to see if ISIS reaches out to those, you know, those neighborhoods or something. Hopefully not.
Frank on the South Side. Hi, Frank.
Hi, I'm calling regarding to the issue in South Africa and the kind of coverage that he got. I would like for your guests to tell us what he thinks about the kind of coverage that CNN gave to that, to the incident in South Africa where the South Africans were killing other African immigrants that are, you know, that were in South Africa.
Okay, thanks, Frank.
Yeah, I haven't been there, Frank, in a long time, but I was there before when apartheid was there, but I was also there when the changes happened in the elections and when Mandela was released. I know it's an ongoing problem because when the borders opened up, the influx of immigrants that came into South Africa, I think, changed the whole dynamics. I'm not sure where it stands today. I just haven't been there.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard to comment on that.
And some tweets coming in for CNN's Mark Biello. Beth tweets the show, how much coffee does he drink with minutes and hours of sleep at a time?
Actually, the caffeine I get from Diet Cokes.
Oh.
And Excedrin.
There you go. And
no product endorsement.
Shannon tweets the show, any sage advice for us young journalists?
Yes. Learn from the older journalists. Learn that the young journalists now that are very social media savvy, it's the integrity of journalism in the age of social media. And that's exactly what I did when I was in my 20s, was to learn from the older people around me, or find a mentor, or find someone that can coach you or guide you or sort of train you. You have your certain skills, and it's now it's kind of a marriage between social media and digital era versus the old school journalism of journalism ethics. And I think, you know, you could really learn and combine both of them together.
Sure. Great advice. And so after an incredible career with the network, in a few years, you'll retire. How do you see cable news going forward in this social media age that we live in today?
I think that's going to be a big challenge for any, not just cable news, but the network news and the shifting of the generations too, because as the old school and the old journalists retire, you have this new exciting digital age coming up. It's going to be a huge challenge to try to keep a viewer or listener, you know, with the age of, you know, tweeting, blogging, Instagram, Facebook, and also between radio, television, and cable.
When you retire, I would think regular life would be kind of boring after everything you've seen and experienced. What's the next phase for you?
That's a good question. I don't know. I've been to China 4 times with University of Missouri, and kind of mentoring and teaching young Chinese journalists. Perhaps teaching? I don't know.
Who knows? But I'm sure it will be fascinating. And it's such a pleasure to welcome you to the show. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
He's CNN's Mark Biello. It's Mad Dog CNN on Twitter. Much more still ahead later. Cole Pepper on the Jags picks in the draft. But up next, helping low vision adults here on the First Coast. Back in a moment.
New name, new look, great information. Join us for our annual Women's Health Conference, Girls Day Out, August 15th. Hyatt Regency Hotel. Good for You is a day of celebrating women's health planned just for you. Great speakers, great food, health screenings, and so much more. Hosted by Baptist Health and WJCT. For a complete list of speakers or to purchase your tickets, log on to WJCT/Good for You. Makes a perfect Mother's Day gift.
Who will be Jacksonville's next sheriff? Ken Jefferson and Mike Williams emerged among seven hopefuls to replace term-limited John Rutherford. WJCT has teamed up with First Coast News and the Florida Times Union to present the Jacksonville Sheriff Debate. Listen to the Sheriff Debate Tuesday, May 5th at 7 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT FM.
Welcome back. Well, it's a community-based rehabilitation program for adults and high school students who have blindness or any kind of visual impairment. This is such a lifeline for low-vision adults on the First Coast. And here to tell us more, we welcome Connie Brown. She's project coordinator with the Vision Education and Rehabilitation Center at FSCJ. Connie, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being with us. You know, this is really a cause close to our hearts here at WJCT because our radio reading service reaches out to low-vision adults, and there are so many of them. We'll talk about that in a moment, but first, tell us about this center and what you do.
Well, we are located at Florida State College, as you mentioned, and we are funded through the Division of Blind Services. All of our services are free to individuals as far as our training projects are concerned. We operate under four contracts. We have the transition contract, which is our students ages 14 to 21 years of age. Then there is the VR, vocational rehab, which is adults who are generally seeking to either remain employed, maybe they're starting to lose vision and they wish to remain employed, or they're looking for employment. It kind of just depends, but or they could be college students as well who are out there kind of exploring what they would like to do next. Then we have the older blind population, which is ages 55 and older. And of course, then we have what is called the adult program, which is individuals who are, they are adults, but for whatever reason, they cannot maintain employment or not seeking to go to work. So those are kind of our four areas.
How do you help people who are blind or really poor vision keep a job, get a job?
Well, you kind of have to start with where they are. And oftentimes it's, you know, looking at their independent living skills and working on those, their orientation and mobility. If you see someone out with a cane or a dog or, you know, some of the other maybe optical devices, then like a maybe a microscopic reader so they can see street signs and those kind of things. Those are the types of things that we provide training in, adjustment to blindness counseling, because we want that individual to have a holistic look at their lives. And then, of course, assistive technology. Technology is, you know, everything to everyone right now, and it's no different for, especially for individuals who have low vision or blindness. And then we also provide areas of job readiness training. We work closely with Division of Blind Services to be sure that individuals are on the right track to get back out there and go on with their lives.
And, of course, you work or you refer back and forth to us, low vision adults, because our radio reading service, what we do here is we provide a special radio to low vision or blind adults, and they can tune into our special channel where they can listen to people, our volunteers, who come in and they read the newspaper and they read other articles and printed documents on the air for people who can't read because they can't see anymore.
Absolutely. It's a tremendous service. And we know quite a few of our current clients who are using this service, some who just recently applied. And then it's just been a longstanding, huge opportunity for it, for individuals out there who have low vision or blindness and maybe don't have someone available who can help them with, you know, knowing what's going on in the world.
And our vision really is, as it's called, our precious sight. It's something we take for granted until we might actually lose it. I can't even imagine not being able to see. And so just the emotional impact of that and the logistical impact of how difficult that is for people, they really need a helping hand like yours to navigate that.
Yes. 80% of what we learn is through vision. So that statistic made me stutter.
It's true.
It is 80% of what we learn. So if you take away 80% of what you experience in the world, and then think about individuals who go out, every day, they do their jobs, they carry on in their lives, and yet they have no vision or low vision. It's, it's remarkable that individuals are definitely capable of doing that. And we teach it every day. We teach them to be independent. I don't like to think that we're helping them. I like to think that we're training them for independence.
And for people listening right now, and this is the first they've heard about this program, how can they learn more and take advantage of what you're offering?
Well, certainly call us. We are at 904-633-8220. And if you have someone who's an individual, a family member, a friend, who you think might benefit from our services, certainly let us know that. We can proceed with helping with applications to Division of Blind Services. Many of our services have to be referred through them first. Well, we're happy to take that application, get that to Division of Blind Services, so that these individuals can start receiving training toward independence.
Well, it's a fabulous initiative and program available here in our area, and kudos to FSCJ for offering it. Connie, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
She's Connie Brown, Project Coordinator with the Vision, Education, and Rehabilitation Center at FSCJ. And we're back in a moment with Cole.
Wherever you spend your morning, NPR's Morning Edition is there with you. Wherever the story takes place, NPR's Morning Edition connects it with you.
Dallas.
Des Moines.
Topeka.
Montana.
Cleveland.
San Francisco.
Denver.
Philadelphia.
Minneapolis.
Miami.
Colorado.
Washington.
You will own your morning, wherever you are, when you choose to spend tomorrow with Morning Edition from NPR News. Weekday mornings beginning at 5 on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Relax around the clock with the music of your life. Playing great music from Frank Sinatra and Ella Fitzgerald to James Taylor, Joni Mitchell, and more. Relax Radio, WJCT, 89.9 HD3. Learn more at wjct.org/relax.
Never know how much I love you.
Creek sponge divers and their families first came to Tarpon Springs more than a century ago, and today the town has the largest percentage Greek population of any American city. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll visit Tarpon Springs. We'll discuss the St. John's Railway and hear about the 5-foot-tall pre-Columbian Hontoon Owl sculpture. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, the Jaguars land some big names in the draft.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
Cole Pepper's here now with a closer look at all the week's sports. And, the Jaguars had the pick of the litter, which is great.
Yeah, they really did after the two quarterbacks, Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota, went 1-2 to Tampa Bay and Tennessee, respectively. The Jaguars really could sit there and say, all right, quarterbacks always get overdrafted, and it's such an important position in the NFL. But basically, the Jaguars got to pick who they thought was the best player in the draft. And when it came down to it, they decided that the Gators pass rusher Dante Fowler Jr. was the best player with the best fit for the Jaguars' needs. They did consider some others, Leonard Williams from USC, the defensive tackle, Amari Cooper, the wide receiver from Alabama, but they settled on Fowler, who is the fourth Gator to be selected in the first round by the Jaguars. The others are Reggie Nelson, Derek Harvey, and Fred Taylor. And here's an interesting connection. Taylor's son, Kelvin, who plays running back at Florida, happens to be Fowler's best friend.
Oh, get out of here.
So there's already that built-in Jaguars affinity.
Now, before we move on and talk about all the football stuff, I have to ask you the really important question, Cole. Let's talk for just a little bit about Dante Fowler's shoes and suit.
That was something. There's a good...
Because that caught my eye.
It caught everybody's eye. He had these, I think they were Louis Vuitton
$7,000 shoes.
Yeah, yeah. So this is what you do when you're about to become a millionaire.
Uh-huh.
You can get out the bling, but the like these gold and studded sort of sequins looking shoes. It was a statement. There's no doubt about it. And he was the first guy who was picked who was there at the draft. So he comes down. He has this like white tux on. It was a look. There's no doubt about it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure that fits with the, you know, what we hear about him as a person, that he's as a player, that he's you know, not a look at me guy. He's a go out there, do the work guy, and he's not flat. But you know, on draft day, you have that opportunity to showcase, and there is no doubt that the shoes
they made
played.
Now, let me ask you though, can he if he's not flashy on the field, can we expect him though to bring a little swagger and sass and a little sizzle with his steak to this franchise?
Well, and so this is the big question. If Dante Fowler Jr. is the pass rusher that they think he can be, if he becomes that, and in fairly short order, usually pass rushers don't come right in as rookies and make a major impact. You see some flashes here and there. But if he becomes a consistent 10, 12, 14 sack a year guy, then this draft becomes a good draft for the Jaguars. They haven't had a true, you know, week in and week out pass rusher since Tony Brackens back in the late 90s. This has been a spot that the Jaguars just have never really had. They've tried to acquire it during free agency. They've tried to draft it. Mentioned Derek Harvey earlier. He never worked out. So that was definitely one of the things that can make a big difference. And in this day and age, Melissa, with the passing game being so prevalent in the National Football League, the key positions to draft are the quarterback, the left tackle who blocks the guy who rushes, and then you know, major impact wide receiver and cornerback. And those first three I mentioned, quarterback, left tackle, and pass rusher, are really the key spots. And if you look at it, interestingly enough, in his first three drafts, general manager Dave Caldwell has drafted a left tackle, a quarterback, and a pass rusher in the first round.
Uh-huh.
So it may all kind of come together.
Well, we shall hope so, right?
I do think this becomes a spot where the Jaguars got a lot of great international and national attention for their draft. Everybody puts a grade on the draft. And routinely, the Jaguars are getting an A for this draft.
That's great.
And you couple that with what happened with, and it's not just Fowler, by the way. I mean, they top to bottom, it looks like a very good draft. A lot of big school players, that always helps, plus some notable players who played on the national stage. That's just about perception, though. So if Fowler is the guy they think he is, he almost immediately makes an impact. And look at it another way. The Jaguars may have landed as many as five guys who could play significant roles this year in the draft. Added that, the free agent additions, and you're looking at six or seven new starters brought in this offseason out of 22. That's a lot of change for a team that's gone 7-25 over the past two seasons. A lot of change is a good thing. You know, they haven't been to the playoffs in 8 years. Looks like a very good offseason for Dave Caldwell. Now we'll see if it translates into a competitive team.
Let's hope so. In the meantime, the Armada had a big win over the weekend and a good crowd,
right? Great crowd, over 8,000, a near sellout at Community First Park of the baseball grounds on Saturday night. Match was tied at 1 with San Antonio, the defending NASL champions, in injury time. So they played the 90 minutes, and they had 4 minutes of injury time tacked on when rookie Akil Barrett stole the ball in midfield, motored upfield, threaded a pass to Keita, who scored the game winner. The Armada are the highest scoring team in the North American Soccer League, and if they win on Saturday at home against Indy, they could be as high as second in the NASL standings after a little more than a month in their first season. It's been a terrific start for the Armada.
Last but not least, will you be heading out to the players this week with the rest of Jacksonville?
Well, listen, if you ever have had a hard time getting a hold of somebody in Jacksonville, let me just give you some advice. Just stand at the crossroads between the back of 18, they're behind there, and you're going to see everybody that you've ever met
in
town.
That's right, that's right.
And so, which may not always be a good thing, depending on how you've lived your life, but you will also see 9 former champions of this event playing this week. Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, Adam Scott, Sergio Garcia, defending champ Martin Keimer, Matt Kuchar, Henrik Stenson, KJ Choi, and Justin Leonard. And that's not to mention the two hottest players in the world, Rory McIlroy, the world's number one, who turns 26 years old today, by the way.
Oh, really?
Won the World Match Play Championships yesterday. And Jordan Spieth, the Masters champion. So, great field as always. It's a signature event in Jacksonville and along the First Coast. And then, of course, it wraps up traditionally on Mother's Day on Sunday, which means you have a lot of guys wearing pink coming down the 18th.
Which is always fun. And you might just bump into Cole Pepper by the 18th hole, too. So there's that.
Right? If you've angered the gods, you may.
Well, I hope you have fun. And as always, thanks for being with us. He's Cole Pepper. Follow him on Twitter at Cole Pepper and have a great week.
Thanks, Melissa.
And that's our program. Thanks so much for listening. And thanks to all of our guests and callers today. This show's producer is Sean Birch. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Shevchuk. If you've got questions or feedback, we always want to hear it. Emails go to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And never miss a show. Our daily podcast is now on iTunes. Next on Diane Rehm, in the aftermath of the death of Freddie Gray in Baltimore, look at the underlying causes of urban poverty and racial strife, how income disparity, government housing policies, and the decline of manufacturing affect the lives of African Americans in major U.S. cities. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.